If ever a story summed up what it is to fall in love with a world of magic and imagination, it's Peter Pan. It's hard to believe it was written 100 years ago. It's been remade in the movies just about every generation. There's only ever been the one book, though, at least officially. J.M. Barrie gave the copyright for Peter Pan to the trustees of the Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital, and this year, to mark the 100th anniversary of the book, they commissioned a sequel. From the award-winning children's writer Geraldine McCorcoran, her book is called Peter Pan in Scarlet. Here's how she came to write it.
Well, I won a competition. Much to my amazement and slight fear, I won a competition in a newspaper. I mean, it wasn't exactly complete this sentence in less than 12 words, but it did feel a bit like that. I read this article, at least my husband read this article, to the effect that Great Ormond Street Hospital were looking for someone to write the sequel to J.M. Barrie's book. And he said, oh, you should go in for that, woman. And I thought, yes, you're right, they're just going to give it to me, aren't they? Yeah. But then the idea kind of stuck with me and I couldn't get it out of my head. And I thought, well, it would be fun just to try, just as a kind of writing challenge, the kind of thing that you get set on writing courses, you know. See, can I pick up Barrie's style? Can I copy his sense of humour? So I did it in that frame of mind as a kind of intellectual exercise. But then when I won, that was an entirely different thing.
What did you think were the biggest challenges to it? You talked about trying to pick up Barrie's style and his sense of humour. Were those the main challenges or what?
The thing that I think was most difficult was being true to Barrie's spirit more than his style, wanting to do right by the man. I knew it was a liberty to be taking with his work, but I equally knew that he would want it to happen in benefit of the hospital. So I didn't feel any sense of guilt exactly, but I did want to know that I was picking up on his preoccupations. So I went along with his Edwardianness. I didn't bring the sequel too far forward in time, because I think part of the charm is that it's set so long in the past, and the past to a child is like a different country, an exotic country at that. Then I went for his preoccupations with heroism and self-sacrifice and those things that are in Peter Pan, and the anarchy of childhood as well.
Well, of course, there are practical problems that you had to deal with as well. The fact that even though you set this, what, about 20 years in the future of the end of the original Peter Pan, still that meant that Wendy and the Lost Boys were grown up. What did you do with them?
Well, that was part of my construct for the plot, really, is that the first part of it is that they have to become young again. They have to discover how to become children. And then they have to acquire themselves a fairy so that they can get the fairy dust. And they have to remember how to fly.
Maybe this would be a good time to ask you to read a little bit from the beginning of the book, which would give us a sense of what these young adults go through as they think again about becoming children in order to go back to Neverland. Would you be willing to read a little?
Absolutely. I'm not going to bed, said John, which startled his wife. Children are never ready for bed. But grown-ups like John are usually hankering for their pillows and eiderdowns from the moment they finish dinner. I'm not going to bed, said John again, and so ferociously that his wife knew he was very frightened indeed. You've been dreaming again, haven't you? She said tenderly. Such a trial. John scrubbed at his eyes with his knuckles. I told you, I never dream. What does a man have to do to be believed in his own house? His wife stroked his shiny head and went to turn down the bedclothes. And there, on John's side of the bed, something bulged up through the coverlet. It wasn't a hot water bottle or a teddy bear or a library book. It was a cutlass. With a sigh, she hung it on the hook behind the bedroom door, alongside the quiver of arrows and John's dressing gown. Both she and her husband liked to pretend it was not happening, because that's what grown-ups do when they're in trouble. But secretly, they both knew. John was dreaming of Neverland again.
Mermaid! Here comes one! And rainbow! Look, John, reflections of rainbow!
Tag, tag, tag!
John was dreaming of Neverland again. And Peter Pan.
Oh,
All over London, old boys were dreaming the same kind of dreams. And what do they have in common, these dreamers? Wendy and John, Curly and Slightly, Nibs and Tootles and the twins.
Be careful, John!
There's something down here.
They had all once been in Neverland.
What is it?
This is their reason. This is the reason that they have for finding that they need to go back to Neverland.
Well, what about the other end of the problem? Once you get to Neverland, didn't Hook die at the end of the first book? He was eaten by a crocodile.
This was probably my major problem to overcome, is the fact that he was last seen disappearing into a crocodile. And I don't do ghosts. I've never done ghosts in any of my books. But his evil is still there lurking in the Neverwood.
And Peter? Is Peter Peter? Is he Peter Pan the way we remember him?
Peter is, yes, unchanged, because he, of course, didn't come back. He has stayed in the Neverwood. His only problem is he's bored to death because he's had no adversary for so long and no companions. So first he's forgotten all about his friends, of course, being the egocentric child that he is. But as soon as he remembers them, he's just, it's back to where they were before, and what shall we play?
Happy as he could be. That is one of the things about Peter that we don't think about very often. He really is a selfish little beast, isn't he?
Yes, he's a brat. That's why he was such a gift to be given by Barry to do something with. Had he been the sort of archetypally cutesy kid, a two-dimensional character, I could have done nothing with him. But he isn't. He's the kind of kid that if he broke into your garden, you know, you'd throw things at him. You wouldn't invite him into tea.
Is there another little bit of the book that you could read for us that would give us a sense of your Peter?
Yeah. Okay. Here he is. Bit snotty at the beginning, but quite Peter. I hope you'll recognise him as the original. They've just flown back and they're trying to get into the Wendy house, which is now at the top of a tree. They were confronted by a boy, sword drawn, head tilted back, and a ferocious scowl on his face. Have at you, nightmares! You may breach my castle wall, but I shall fill up the gap with your dead bodies! It was Peter Pan, and it was not. His suit of skeleton leaves was gone, and in its place was a tunic of jay feathers and the blood-red leaves of autumn, Virginia creeper and maple. Now, Peter, said Wendy, stepping into the breach, is that any way to greet your old friends? I have no friends who are old, cried the boy with the drawn sword. I am boy, and if things are big, I cut them down to size. Don't be silly. You're Peter, and I'm Wendy, and we have come... She racked her brains trying to remember. In case you were in trouble. Peter looked at her, baffled. How? In trouble? In a cooking pot with cannibals waiting to eat me, you mean? Fallen off a ship in shark-infested waters? Being carried through the sky by a giant mother eagle to her eyrie to feed her hungry chicks? It was plain Peter rather liked the idea of being in trouble. Then, for the first time, he looked at them properly, and a great smile lit up his face. Ah! You've come back then, have you? I thought I was dreaming you. I've dreamed you a lot lately, he added accusingly. You were much too big.
Why do you think it is that Peter Pan's story has had such a long life?
I think Barry tapped into something in the childhood psyche that is just so right. He just so understood children. It possibly came of him being 4'10". So he went on looking children in the eye. And I think he understood them right down to their souls. And also he understood in adults that wistful desire to rediscover childhood, the childhood that probably never was, but everybody remembers, when the sun always shone and when you could get away with blue murder and come home safe in time for tea. Chiefly, I think he had a great need in himself to get away from the here and now and to go deep inside his imagination, because he led such an unhappy life. And if you can do that, if you have that desperate need to travel deep in your imagination, then it's quite a good place to start being a novelist.
Geraldine McCorcoran, talking about Peter Pan in Scarlet, the first ever authorized sequel to J.M. Barrie's Peter Pan.